Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, the producers, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about how it is we respond, and that is, when I say we, how it is that state governments respond to the needs of children who are abused and neglected across the country. And as you travel around, you know, you go from state to state, there are, in most places, some kind of agency in that state. They're known by different names. Here in the state of Illinois, it's the Department of Children and Family Services, but it's an agency that specifically is there to respond to child abuse and neglect. And as hard as the folks in these agencies work, people who track this issue know that, in fact, in many cases, the situation of these children, many of these children, just doesn't improve very much in spite of the best effort of people who work in child protective services. And this morning in this part of the show, we'll try and talk a little bit about child protection and how it is that sometimes things fall short of what we would like and perhaps how these services could be improved, changed to work better. And our guest for the show is Michael Wald. He is Jackson Eli Reynolds, Professor of Law Emeritus at Stanford Law School, and is one of the leading national authorities on legal policy towards children. He drafted the American Bar Association's standards related to child abuse and neglect, as well as major federal and state laws regarding child welfare. He also served as a deputy general counsel for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This was during the Clinton administration. He also served as executive director of the San Francisco Department of Human Services. And he will be on this campus in 1 week. Next Tuesday, that's the 13th, to give a talk on this very subject, The Limits of Child Protection. This is sponsored by the School of Social Work and takes place at 4:30 in the afternoon in room 314A of the Illini Union. And I am sure that anyone who is interested in attending this talk should feel welcome. And as we talk this morning, questions and comments are welcome also. All we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief so that we can keep things moving along. But anyone is welcome to call. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions and comments certainly are welcome. Professor Wald, hello.
Good morning.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a number for the across the country, the number of children that one way or another come into the system, come into Child Protective Services. Do we have some kind of number?
Yes. Each year, about 5 million children are reported by somebody to a Child Protective Services department around the country as possibly being abused or neglected. That's somewhere around 7-8% of all of the children in the country. About 3 million of those children are actually and their families subject to an investigation on whether they've been abused or neglected, and around 900,000 children, about 1.5% of all children in the country, are formally adjudicated as abused or neglected by a juvenile court each year. My estimates are that at some point before they're 18, somewhere between 10 and 15% of all children in the country are actually brought into a juvenile court proceeding.
Hmm. That strikes me as being a very large number. Does that seem to you?
It strikes me as being a very large number also, yes.
Yeah.
I might say the great we often think about child abuse and neglect in terms of serious physical abuse, physical injuries, or sexual abuse. In fact, the great majority of these cases, well over 70%, are what are called neglect cases, where the family is not able to provide adequate care or housing for the children, almost all of these cases involve families with very limited income. And so when you consider the large number of families with limited income and concerns that neighbors or others may have, that partly accounts for the numbers that are being reported to Protective Services. Mm-hmm.
And if you ask a question something like this, is having been in the system as a child, is that, can that be taken as a predictor of future, you know, success or lack of success in life? Or is that just too, are there just way too many other variables to answer a question like that?
Well, what we can say reasonably clearly is that having been maltreated, significantly neglected or abused as a child, increases the likelihood that the child will experience problems later in life, including a greater likelihood of dropping out of school, a somewhat greater likelihood of delinquency, more difficulty connecting with the labor force. This is as compared with children from families with comparable backgrounds where there's not been maltreatment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming into the system itself, whether those children who are maltreated and come into the system are better off than those who are maltreated and don't come into the system, because many children are abused or neglected and actually never reported, that's much less clear.
Mm-hmm. And I think it seems that to me that one of the things that you're arguing for in terms of how the system might be changed or improved is to consider that, well, as the system exists now, we're talking about child protection. So as far as the law is concerned, that's when a person becomes legally an adult, that's the responsibility of the child welfare system is over, because that person is no longer a child. It seems, though, that what you're arguing for is that we need to, in a sense, expand lift this sort of cap and say that, well, if someone has been in a bad situation as a child and maybe has been in this system, that and they get to be 18, that doesn't mean that suddenly they're going to be fine, and that we somehow need to address the needs of young adults as well as a part of a continuum.
That's true, although there are two separate issues, and we may get to this. I actually think that too many children are currently brought into the child protection system when they're under 18, and that we ought to be dealing with many of the families in different systems, in the health system and in the education system. But what now happens for the children that are brought in to the system, as soon as they turn 18, all efforts in most states end, with a small exception for some kids in, that are in foster care, and that we don't, we think of the needs of children as being over when they're 18. One of the things that I have been looking at and working with a number of foundations and state and city governments in recent years is the need to look at young adults who have been in the child welfare system, and also young adults who have been dropouts or in the juvenile justice system, and to meet their ongoing needs, not to abandon them when they're 18, because they're often without any family available, they're without other sorts of resources, and we ought to be having programs that continue at least until these youth are 24, 25.
Mm-hmm. Let me just very quickly here introduce again our guest for anyone who might have tuned in. We're talking with Michael Wald. He's Emeritus Professor of Law at Stanford Law School, and he's one of the country's leading authorities on legal policy towards children. He will be here on this campus in a week, next Tuesday, to talk about the limits of child protection. And that's what we're talking about here this morning, talking about why it is that child protective services don't function better. They often function rather poorly. And there are some kids that don't end up better off as a result of their experience in the system. And we'll talk here with him, and he'll be talking when he's here next week about how things might be changed for the better. 333-9455 is our Champaign Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455 if you are listening and you would like to join into the conversation. Let me go back and give you the chance to talk a little bit more about the first point that here you made in response to my last question, and that is that you're feeling that perhaps there are too many children who are brought into Child Protective Services, and that may be that they have particular needs that need to be addressed, but that's not the best way to do it or the best agency to do that. Why?
Yes. So right now, as I said, there are about 5 million reports, children reported each year, of whom about 900,000 actually are formally brought into the child welfare system. That means about 4 million cases that are investigated with a lot of trauma to the children, with a lot of trauma to the parents, and nothing is done. Even though, in fact, many of these children and families have problems that we ought to be doing something about and helping them. The major problem is that over the years, despite lots of efforts at changing legislation, and in a place in Illinois, there have been lawsuits, maybe 15 or 20 lawsuits over the last 30 years trying to improve the system, the child welfare system simply doesn't have the resources to aid most of these families who are poor, who often need mental health services, who live in isolated conditions, in neighborhoods that are difficult, and the resources that are available within the child protection system just have never increased to the point of really being able to work with these families. Moreover, the child protection system is viewed with great skepticism by many communities and many families. This isn't always the case, and some child protective workers and systems work quite well with families, but mostly it is not a system that is seen as a helping system. Home health visitors, early Head Start programs, preschool programs, community family resource centers are often able to work with children and families in a much more congenial or a manner in which the parents are more responsive. One of my views is that we ought to be referring many more families not to the child protective system, but to other kinds of resources and communities, and increasing the availability of those resources.
Okay. Well, we have a caller here. Let's bring them into the conversation. Someone who's listening this morning in Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I'm wondering what Dr. Wald thinks about such programs as the court-appointed special advocates program that exists here in Champaign County and elsewhere, and should that kind of program or something analogous to it be available for delinquents who get young people get caught up in the criminal justice system and are adjudicated as delinquent? I'll turn off my phone and listen on the radio.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two things. The court-appointed special advocates, or CASAs, who are generally volunteers who work with children in foster care. Many of them do incredible jobs. They have a single child that they're responsible for, and they devote a lot of time and really alter the outcomes for those children. Only a small percentage of children actually get CASAs, because you need volunteers, and it is this one-on-one situation. So that while I think that that they do often very good jobs, expanding it even in the foster care system is difficult. I would continue to have such programs. I do think that over time in the child welfare system, in the child protection system, we've added lawyers, We've added CASAs, or court-appointed special advocates. We've added often guardian ad litem. We've added more and more personnel without really increasing the kinds of resources, housing, job training, parent training, mental health, drug treatment, that is really necessary to change the lives of the children and the parents, and they're just adding more people in the formal system without actually having the resources is unlikely to significantly improve the well-being of children.
Mm. I guess the other question, it had something to do with, could a program like that address the needs of kids who are in the beginning stages of the juvenile justice system?
I think that they could do that, but as I said, my concern is that while I think that individuals do very well and would do equally well with kids in the juvenile justice system, that it's very hard to even get enough court-appointed special advocates for those in the child welfare system, I don't see it lightly that we're going to have major expansion of that. It takes volunteers. Volunteers are more willing to do it often with kids in foster care who have been abused or neglected. So while it's something I would favor additional recruitment, I don't see it as a major likelihood of improving the juvenile justice system.
Yeah. Let me, again, just to mention the phone numbers, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers, whichever works best for you. Certainly comments and questions here are welcome as we continue to talk with our guest Michael Wald. He's Professor Emeritus at Stanford Law School and is one of the country's leading authorities on legal policy toward children. Questions certainly welcome. It seems to me just you ticked off what some of the major problems are with Child Protective Services, and it seems that the first one has been cited as a problem for about as long as I can remember, and that is the resource issue. We have probably not enough caseworkers, and they're having to try to respond to the needs of way too many families and too many children. So the kind of service that's delivered is, as a result, not what we would like. Does it seem to you that that's something that's going to change any time? Given the fact that, as I say, we've been talking about this being a problem for decades, is that something that's likely to change anytime soon?
I think it's extremely unlikely to change. And it's not only the number of caseworkers where there's been some degree of improvement, but also salaries of caseworkers, which are generally low and lead to high rates of turnover, and so you don't have as much experience and you don't have continuity in cases. But I think in considering the likelihood of increased resources, you really need to think about the competition for resources for children. By far, the greatest amount of resources in every state goes to kindergarten through 12th grade education, constituting between 40% and 50% of the state budget in every state. And there's a pressure to get more and more resources into the school systems as we try to improve outcomes in the school system. There's also a lot of pressure move the school system down, to add universal preschool, to increase child care, and to extend the time that kids receive services through a good after school. And all of those programs, particularly K-12 education, have lots of public support. Legislators and governors want to do that. And by the time those are all funded, and then such things as medical services for seniors and for disabled and other basic services in the state, there really is not much money left in state budgets for Child Protective Services, and I just don't see that changing. That's one of the reasons why I would advocate for trying to do more for these children and families through the education system, through preschools, rather than think that we're going to get the resources into protective services.
Mm-hmm. The second point that you mentioned, it seems to me difficult, and perhaps difficult to address in a different way, but that is the fact that you suggest, and I think that it's true, that people view with skepticism and also suspicion this system, and that is, as much as people who work in child protective services would say that their job is to try to help children, to try to help families, to try to keep families together, that the experience of the families that may be the target of investigation, they regard Child Protective Services as these are the people who take your kids away, and that they're likely to come along and tell you that you're an unfit parent, and that they're not going to look at Child Protective Services in a positive way as someone who's going to try to help you or to help keep your family together. They see them as these are the people that take your children away. What do you do about that?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. The vast majority of Child Protective Service workers are very dedicated, really want to help children and families, but they have to start with saying, I'm here to investigate you for maltreatment, abusing or neglecting, and that makes it very difficult to establish a relationship with the families. The families are brought to court, and unfortunately court proceedings are often dehumanizing experiences where people are run through without much attention, with large caseloads in court, and the families do not often see this as helping. There are efforts to change this through programs that are such as family group conferencing, where entire networks of families are brought in, but it's still very hard to get these families to see the system as a positive response. And that ties to the fact that, as I mentioned, that the vast majority of families are poor families who are accused of neglect. They see their problems as embedded in their lack of income, in their poor housing, in their dangerous neighborhoods. They don't see themselves as abusive or bad parents. They see themselves as overwhelmed parents. And a system that, such as home health visitors, that comes and offers some help rather than offers investigation is something that families just see as a more responsive system.
Mm. Well, that leads to this third point about your suggestion that probably rather than getting into Child Protective Services, that these families really should be referred to other programs. And I suppose what that really would suggest is that at least early on, there's got to be some kind of assessment. Someone's got to meet with the family, got to do a home visit, got to kind of see what's going on, and then make some decision about the referral. How do you, is there some way to set up, could Child Protective Services do that, or would you need to actually have some different kind of person do that?
I would change. Right now, the thing that is driving this system is mandatory reporting laws, which were adopted in the 1960s when we first began to focus on child abuse and neglect, and were adopted in response to what was seen as a problem of children with severe injuries coming to hospitals or to pediatricians and not being diagnosed as battered. And in an effort to get doctors and hospitals to focus on these children and to report them to authorities, we passed mandatory reporting laws. But those that these children had to be reported to protective services, those laws have been expanded greatly over the years to encompass more and more people who have to report and a broader set of conditions with a kind of general neglect, which has led to these 5 million reports each year. I think that what we should be doing is narrowing the focus of mandatory laws back to where they originally started, on serious cases of physical abuse or sexual abuse, and that what we should be doing in other cases, about a quarter of all of the children who come into this system are infants or very young children. And rather than having mandatory reports, I think a system of health visitors, of visiting nurses who come to homes, who follow up there after hospital, social workers in child care settings and in preschool should be connecting with the families, giving them services directly, and then when it's beyond what those workers are able to do with them, we need a system of family resource centers, of support systems for families, to which the families can be recommended, and most of them will take up that if the recommendations there. I think that we ought to limit the investigation to what are thought to be children who whose physical safety is really in jeopardy. Mm-hmm.
And for this kind of different sort of multifaceted system that you're talking about, do the pieces of this system exist now, and it's just a matter of putting them together, or would we? Is this another case where one thing we would have to say is that we are going to need more people to deliver these various services?
I think that varies a lot by locality, and so you can make a generalization within Illinois and certainly among the different states. Some in many places there are a network of family support centers, of boys and girls clubs for older children. I think in those places, coordination and expansion of the kinds of work that they do will be necessary. In other places, I think significantly more resources are going to be needed, particularly mental health resources for both children and for parents, more in the way of family therapy and drug treatment that is involved in many of these situations will be necessary. And again, I think politically we may be better able to get support for resources through health-based systems or through education-based systems than we're likely through protection systems. Mm-hmm.
We're a little bit past our midpoint here in this hour of Focus 580, and I would like to introduce again our guest for anyone who might have tuned in the last few minutes. We're talking with Michael Wald. He is Jackson Eli Reynolds Professor of Law Emeritus at Stanford Law School, and he's one of the leading national authorities on legal policy toward children. He drafted the American Bar Association standards related to child abuse and neglect, as well as major federal and state laws regarding child welfare. He served as Deputy General Counsel for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services during the Clinton administration, and also as executive director of the San Francisco Department of Human Services. He'll be on the campus of the University of Illinois 1 week from today. This is Tuesday, November 13th, to give a talk on the limits of child protection, talking about some of these various issues and why it is that at least some of the many children who are reported to Child Protective Services every year, why is it that getting CPS involved doesn't necessarily improve their situation? And I'm sure he'll be talking about that and a little bit about how things might be changed or improved, much as we're talking here this morning. This is his visit here next week is sponsored by the School of Social Work, and he will be giving a talk Tuesday afternoon, 4:30, in room 314A of the Illini Union on the U of I campus. And I'm sure that anyone who is listening, who is interested in going to hear him talk, should feel welcome. Questions are welcome here too. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I want to pick up on another point that you mentioned a little bit earlier, and that is we're talking here about children under the age of 18 who are legally considered to be children, individuals legally considered to be children, and how the child protection system addresses their needs. And we also mentioned the fact that once an individual becomes a legal adult after they're 18 years old, then the system's done with them. But that really ignores the fact that if someone has in their childhood and their adolescence been in a difficult home, living in a bad neighborhood, maybe going to bad schools, has had little or no work experience, and maybe their social skills aren't what they should be, this is a person who is not not going to be very well set up to be able to be independent, to earn a living, to have a stable family of their own, and that it doesn't make sense for the system just to say at the point where they turn 18, just to, you know, say wave goodbye and say good luck. But then we don't really have much to address the needs of people who've maybe come through the system, but once they get to be 18 years old, then there isn't anything else for them. What do we do, or what might be done for young adults who, as children, maybe were in the system?
Yes, I think that this is an area where we need some major rethinking of what we're doing now. The way I think about it is, suppose we wanted all people to reach age 25 with a small number of what I would call minimum outcomes, that they're able to connect successfully with the labor force, that they're able to connect successfully with a supportive social system, that they have family or friends or a partner that they are connected to, that if they are a parent, that they are able to be a basically adequate parent. If we just wanted those three outcomes, a social support system connecting to the labor force and a basically adequate parent, right now, somewhere between 5 and 10% of all youth, when they don't reach those outcomes, when they by the time they're age 25, and about 20% of all teenagers are at a pretty substantial risk of falling into that group. They're mostly youth that are in foster care in the juvenile justice system, or high school dropouts, or young parents. And all of those, we try and do something until they're 18 with foster kids, with juvenile justice, with to some degree with dropouts. But once they're 18, except for a small group of foster kids, the state stops being responsible for them. Many are left without housing, without places to live, they can't go back. They don't have education opportunities in schools. I think that needs to be changed in a significant way. We're beginning to do that with foster children who turn 18 when they're in foster care. Now under federal law, they're entitled to services till they're 21. And in recent research out of Chapin Hall Children's Center at the University of Chicago, has found that in Illinois, where the court and the social work department stays involved with these youth until age 21, that they have much better outcomes. They're much more likely to complete education, less likely to get into the criminal justice system than comparable youth who were studied in two other states, Wisconsin and Iowa, that keeping open a system for them benefits them. Unfortunately, that's rare, and for kids in the juvenile justice system or for dropouts, there's very little that is offered. What I would do is create a system that has that uses community colleges, high school expanded for 18 and 19 year olds to come back to school, hopefully to earn regular degrees, but to have GED programs, strong support systems for young mothers within welfare and social services system. And where we really need to improve is a significant increase in employment training, transitional jobs for 18 to 25 year olds. Most 18 to 25 year olds wind up with 7 or 8 different jobs during that period, bouncing around with little in the way of training and support. And if we want to have these outcomes that I talked about, that the workforce system has to be improved significantly. Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of callers we'll get to in just a moment. First, I'd just like to pass on to you a news item that's just come over the Associated Press wire. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan today lost his final bid to delay starting his prison term when Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens turned down his request to remain free on bail. Ryan is due to report to the Federal Correctional Center at Oxford, Wisconsin tomorrow to start serving his 6.5-year racketeering and fraud sentence. Ryan and his co-defendant Larry Warner have remained free on bond since their April 2006 convictions. Warner was also turned down today. The two men had asked Stevens to grant them bail at least until the nation's high court decides whether to hear their appeal. I'm sure we'll have more news on this later in the day. Our first comprehensive look at state and regional news comes at 12:30 as part of the afternoon magazine, and I'm sure we'll have expanded coverage of the story as we continue throughout the rest of the day. This morning here on the Sparta Focus 580, again, we're talking with Michael Wald. He is Emeritus Professor of Law at Stanford Law School and has done a lot of work in the area of legal policy toward children. We're talking here about the child protection system as it exists and perhaps how it might be improved. And we have two callers here waiting patiently. We'll get right to them. First going to someone in Champaign, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
The business about Ryan is probably the least important thing to put on the air right now. Since we live in a very complicated and whatever society or collection of societies, is there any consideration given to the fact that one society view does not apply to all people? And is there a second thing? Is there the possibility that my observation that the school's counseling service over the past, say, 30 years has seemed to be producing recipients of social services rather than producing students? And is there any good reason for compelling one-sided views of what could be abuse, disallow whatever that comment was. But I'll turn off, and I'd like to listen to you.
All right. Professor Wald?
Well, as I understand, there are several different points that the caller raised. I do think we have multiple societies and different cultures, and that it's very important that the child welfare system and all other systems that serve children be aware of the cultural differences and able to provide services in a way that are responsible for to the cultural norms of the family and the child. I think a critical part of all of these systems is recognizing that the best protection for children are their families, that's where we need to work with and to strengthen families, and that can only be done in an adequate way if we understand the values and backgrounds of the families, both the parents and extended family, and we utilize that adequately. On the issue of school counseling, in fact, over the last 30 years, graduation rates have been going up from high school. I think that we've shown, although it's thought that high school has gotten worse, that we've been improving to a small degree, at least, and increased our graduation rates. But far too many children still don't graduate high school. They come from a relatively small proportion of all schools that are often the least resourced, that are in isolated areas and that have very, very low graduation rates. And in those schools, there's far too little counseling available, that we've cut back school counseling, and that we don't have counselors who understand the families and the norms, and that we should be improving that at the school system. And some of the work that is being done in different places in Illinois, again in Chicago through their efforts at multiple pathways for children in schools, are ways to increase the likelihood that the schools will relate to the youth and their families in a way that that can help them graduate.
Let us go on to another caller here. This is someone in Champaign, and it's line number one. Hello.
Yes, I've been listening to this very intently because it is such a topical subject. And I've heard things like the problems that Child Protective Services has with regard to neglected and abused children and getting better outcomes is generally because we have low-income kids who have all the pathologies of low-income kids. But yet there's something that's not been brought out that I think bears some discussion, and is, or a disproportionate number of these kids of a certain race, for example, are these disproportionately African-American kids who suffer from many of these bad life situations?
The answer is yes. Disproportionately African-American kids suffer from the life circumstances of low income and are brought disproportionately into the child welfare system. And although there's controversy around the research, I think there's lots of research indicating an unequal treatment in decision-making with respect to African-American children. I think that that unless we deal with race issues, with the isolation of many families, with the geographic isolation of many families, with the concentration of very poor schools in areas with high African-American populations, we will never adequately address the needs of these children and their families, that race is a central element to it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. We'll go next to line number three. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, hi. I work with children in foster care and in foster homes, and I'm just wondering what the speaker has to say about the quality of foster homes and how we might improve those homes, and what outcomes the children who tend to stay in the same foster homes and have what we call placement stability, how that might affect the children's outcomes for the future, as he was talking about regards to job performance and being a so-called productive member of society.
The foster system plays an incredibly important role. There are over 500,000 children in foster care, many with relatives, and about 100,000 new children come into foster care each year. Unfortunately, it has become harder and harder as the numbers of children in foster care have gone up to recruit foster parents and to retain foster parents in the system. And one of the major problems that legislation that I drafted in 1980 and that has been subject to a lot of litigation to try and get it implemented is that it's very hard to get a stable foster placements, that the children are now still on average placed in 2, 3, 4 or more homes. A really good stable foster home can serve a child who has been abused very well, and the outcomes for those children tend to be quite good, and maybe better than and better than if they were left at home. The problem is we don't have nearly enough adequate foster parents. We don't have training for foster parents. We don't have what are called therapeutic foster homes, where the parents receive support and training to work with kids with emotional problems. And I think that unless we reduce the number of children coming into the system, into the foster care system, we will not have an adequate number of high-quality foster homes. So I think that what we need to do is reduce the number of children by increasing services, the kinds that I've talked about before, for children at home. But then for those children coming in, that we need to do better training, increase the resources, provide more support so that good foster parents will stay, will not drop out of the system, and it will make it more likely that the kids will have stable placements.
I agree. We need much better foster homes in this community.
All right. Well, I thank you for the comment.
Thank you.
Others are welcome, too. We have about 3-4 minutes left in this part of Focus. Just because I want to make sure that I understand here, just going back to the question of the last caller and this issue of why it is we can't seem to have more stable placements for foster kids, does that mostly have to do with not having enough people who are willing to be foster parents, or is there something else in the way that the foster care system is structured that somehow discourages or gets in the way of a more stable, long-term kind of placement?
I think there are several different reasons. One is that because we don't provide enough support for foster parents, they often decide to stop being foster parents, and then kids get moved as a result of that. Beyond that, a lot of the instability comes because a lot of the children have emotional problems from what was happening in their environment. They have behavioral problems, and without training and without a really good support system from the the social workers, from the courts, a lot of parents get discouraged and they give up on the children. They ask that they be removed from their house and placed in another home, and then the kids' behavior gets increasingly bad, and then they bounce from home to home or into group homes. So I think that improvements in the services are essential, both to recruit and to keep stable foster parents. I think that also we need more in the way of mental health services for the children there, so that they also are able to function well in the out-of-home setting.
Mm. You have talked about some ideas for restructuring this system, or in maybe we're going beyond restructuring. What we're talking about is actually creating something that would be new. So we're talking about making significant changes to a system that has been in place as it is for a long time. How would you go about creating this new system? You can't have everything that you would like. You can't do everything you would like right away. So what would you change if you could just change a couple of things right at the outset? What do you think could be done to make some better outcomes for kids that find themselves in the system?
The two things that I would change immediately, in addition to limiting mandatory reporting laws so that a number of cases don't come into the current system, but the main changes I would have would be to have some form of health visitors available to all newborn children with follow-up and tied in at the local level to very strong family resource centers funded at the county, at the city, and at the state level. And I would also make these major changes on the foster care system, trying to reduce the number of particularly teens who come into foster care, and training therapeutic foster homes, giving much more support to those foster homes, and reevaluate placements in group homes where often kids are not getting very adequate attention, and substitute for that very highly trained and competent foster parents. Those would be the two central places I would start.
And are there places where they're actually trying to do any of this?
There are places around that do pieces of it. You could not point to any one city or any one state which is comprehensively trying to do it. I was just recently in Durham, North Carolina, which is trying to put together the early childhood part of this in a significant way. There have been efforts in Illinois and in other states on trying to improve the foster care system, both extending the age and with more training of therapeutic foster parents. So I think there are models around in different states, but not a whole system approach.
Hmm. Just one thing real quick. I guess that there are some people, the idea of making changes in mandatory reporting for suspicion of abuse, that some people might, that make them a little bit nervous that we would then somehow go back on our efforts to try to make sure that we actually do spot and identify cases of abuse.
Yes, I mean, that surely will be a concern that's raised. What we need to consider is that almost all observers agree that we miss large numbers of kids now, that it's almost random, that the reporting laws don't serve effectively, and lots of mandated reporters don't report because they don't think the system will help kids very much. And also that we're now investigating 4 million cases a year that we do nothing about after they're reported, which is a huge waste of resources as well as trauma to families. I think redesigned reporting laws that would really focus on serious situations would actually get mandated reporters to report all of the relevant cases, and that if we had these other checks, such as home visitors working with families, that we would manage to find the other families adequately and get them into services in a more effective way than we now do.
Well, there we will have to stop. We've used our time for here this morning. We would like to say thanks to our guest, Michael Wald. He is Jackson Eli Reynolds Professor of Law Emeritus at Stanford Law School and has done a lot of work in the area of legal policy toward children. He will be here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois next week on Tuesday. His visit here sponsored by the School of Social Work. He'll be giving a talk on the limits of child protection. This is Tuesday afternoon at 4:30 in room 314A of the Illini Union. I'm sure anyone interested should feel welcome. Professor Wald, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Support for the broadcast today is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. That's it for us here on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. There is much more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. And the host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk with a man who calls New Orleans home. His name is Billy Southern. He is the author of Down in New Orleans, Reflections from a Drowned City. He'll join us following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look at commodity prices in Kansas City. December wheat trading at 820 and a half, up 8 and a quarter. In Chicago, December wheat 798, up 13. March 818 and a half, up 10. July 881 and a half, up 11. December corn 384, up 8 and 3 quarters. March 401 and a quarter, up 8 and 3 quarters. May 411 and a quarter, up 8 and a half. December of 08 430 and a half, up 5 and a quarter. November soybeans 1022, that's up 16 and a quarter. January 1038 and a half, up 17 and a half. March 1053, up 17. November of 08 976, up 9 and